Welcome to the Jamoti Podcast. We are all surrounded by amazing coaches and leaders. So let's get an inside look at not just what they do, but how they do what they do. After all, becoming the best versions of ourselves is Jamoti, just a matter of doing it. Coaches, the Jamoti Podcast is powered by Ballogy. Manage and measure your players' skill development and increase accountability year-round utilizing the Ballogy app. Boost inter-squad competition with drills backed by the National High School Basketball Coaches Association, including a 40-shot Ballogy skills assessment. Please visit Ballogy.com/teams for information on how you can provide this resource for your team. My first question was going to be, if you could have the exact team that you want, maybe it's a college team, a pro team, or even a high school team, but these are the type of players that you love to coach and they work really well together. Let's start offensively. What would offensively be the style of play that you would choose? Because obviously the real answer is it depends on your players, but you've got the players that you love and you want. What would you choose?
Well, I had a team like this, so it's going to be easy to explain. You know, I had a team at Manhattan College in 1995. We had 8 freshmen and sophomores. We had no idea how good we were to start the season, honestly. You know, it was my third year. I had been to an NIT and an NCAA already, thanks to Steve Lapis, who left me a good team behind. And year three was mostly my guys by now. You know, we built on what the success we had. And I had, to give you an idea, I had New York City kids for the most part, New York and Jersey. They were mostly coached by the Catholic League high school coaches in New York and Jersey, which at that time was some of the best high school coaching in the country. And they also, that team also had, nine out of the 13 came from two-parent families. Now, these were inner city kids. When I say inner city, they were, you know, they were minority kids. They were African-American. They were New York kids coached hard by their high school coaches. And then most of them, two-parent families. So when I got them, they had a sense of discipline in their lives.
Yeah.
Okay. So that was the first thing. So I could coach them hard. Okay. Secondly, they were tough. Which fit me because I was a defensive minded coach. My philosophy defensively then, and even now, although I would adjust, I think, was we could press with the best athletes in our league, which I think we had, or we could keep it 20 feet and in and just grab you by the throat with a shot clock. And I used to love the shot clock violation. I love that. You know?
That's a badge of honor right there.
It's not easy. It's not easy. Yeah. You know, it's easier to contest a shot than it is to get a shot clock violation. But we contest shots too. On the offensive end, we certainly ran to get easy baskets. And then we flowed from our fast break into our secondary offense, and that was actually the Kansas offense that, you know, Roy Williams perfected, back screen, you know, loop inside.
Yep.
And we considered that, Matt, our half court offense from the full court. So we were trying to get the easy layup out front, you know, the 2-on-1 or 3-on-1. But when we didn't get it, we went into our secondary break, which was really our half court offense. We were just running it from the full court. And then in the half court, we were trying to figure out ways. I don't believe you can be a motion coach and a set play coach. I think if you're one, the other one's got to be simple. So if you're all motion like Dick Bennett or Tony Bennett or Coach Knight or others, then you're simple. Your sets have to be simple because you're spending all the time in practice on motion. If you're a set play coach, which I was, then your motion's got to be simple. And I once asked the late, great Skip Prosser about his motion rules, and he said, 2 ball reversals and drive it. So that's simple enough.
Pretty simple, yeah.
Pretty simple. And so, I'm saying this to you because this is the lesson for coaches, young coaches. You can't be great at 50 things. You have to figure out what's important to you, and then those got to be the basis of your program. And it's not that we didn't practice presso, or we didn't have tricky out of bounds plays, but we weren't spending 90% of our practice on that. We were running into secondary, set plays, and half court man to man, and that's what we spent most of our time on. And that team was 26-5. We knocked off Oklahoma in the tournament, Kelvin's first year. And to tell you about ball coaches, right? This is a ball coach, okay? There's some coaches who give you the blow-by handshake after the game that just like they're embarrassed they lost to you, which is the truth, right? We beat Kelvin's team that particular day in the tournament, and we became very close friends because of that game, because he respected me and my team. And it wasn't like, I'm sure he was disappointed. Of course he was. I've lost NCAA games. But he appreciated me as a young coach, and we have been good friends ever since. So I don't know if that's a long-winded answer, but the moral of the whole story is don't try to be great at a lot of things. There's probably two or three things that you really are – it's important to you to be good at, and those are the things you have to spend your time on.
And I think you might have been – did you feel this way that you were ahead of the game with the way that you thought about offense there? Because – so many times I feel like people talk about offense as if it's three or four different categories. In yeah. my opinion, when leather touches your fingertips, we're on offense and we need to have concepts that there's very few breaks and stops. We're constantly playing. I love the two reversals and drive it. I mean, yeah. our goal yeah. is to create double gaps. And the moment there's yeah. a double gap, whether off a player movement or ball movement, we're attacking the paint. And from there, man, we score it, we spray it, we move it, yeah. and we just keep repeating that pattern. But you said it. You said we didn't want to, you know, get the ball, walk it up, and then it just seemed yeah. to flow really well.
Well, it's funny because I've studied offense my whole life, and I will say this honestly. I can get five guys off the street and give me 20 minutes in shell drill, and we'll be competent defensively. You know, like, honestly, if you get five kids, if you think of your five toughest kids you've ever coached or five toughest guys you ever played with, they can defend right now. You know, you can give them some, you know, shell stuff, rotation on a baseline. But offense, I told both of my sons who are coaching now, right? You know, Matt and James, you know, remember when yep. they're little kids. Study offense. Defense comes relatively easy. And I don't mean that it's easier. Offense is hard because it takes timing, spacing, utilizing the talent you have. There's no sense of getting an open jump shot for a kid who doesn't make a lot of shots, you know. So, you know, understanding your personnel and creating an offense that fits either individuals and or the team at the same time. And it's why I love studying like international basketball so much, because like I always say this, Matt, we always credit David Stern and Dave Gavitt with the Dream Team 1992. And now you got all, you know, you look at your Dallas Mavericks, right? Luka Doncic, Maxi Kleber, you know, all the great, you know, Jokic in Denver.
Yeah.
Well, here's what happened. In the 60s, I'll give you a little history lesson here.
Yeah.
In the 60s, roughly, guys like Dean Smith, Chuck Daly, Dr. Jack Ramsey, UB Brown, they went around the world in the summer and they taught basketball. They did clinics around the world for the State Department and others. Just country federations would bring, you know, hey, would you come to Italy and do a clinic for our Italian Coaches Association? We taught them to game. We taught them to game, okay, in all these parts of the world. If you watch basketball right now, they've taught it back to us. Mm. You know, spacing, big guys who can handle and shoot threes, you know, pick and roll, passing, extra passes, flow. So what I love about the game is this is why I keep telling you, I come constantly learning. And I might know some, and maybe some think I know a lot, but I don't know it all.
Right.
So that's what I'm trying to do is, and I love teaching offense because it's much harder to teach offense than it is to teach defense.
Coach, how did that happen? How did it go from us teaching them to them teaching us?
Well, it's not that they know more than us. It's just that the globe has shrunk, okay? So I'm going to give you an example. We all go to the Louvre in Paris, okay? You're part of our American coaching contingent, and then we're going to meet our European friends at the Louvre, right? So we're going to go see the Mona Lisa. And the Mona Lisa is a masterpiece, right? When we look at it, it's a masterpiece. The American coaches see the masterpiece from straight on. Like that's our perspective. It's right in front of us. The European coaches are in the room with us, but they're off to the side. They see the Mona Lisa from a different perspective. Hmm. Mona Lisa is basketball. So we all have a different perspective of the masterpiece. And if you think about it, you're not young enough to remember the trapezoid lane. So the trapezoid lane, have you ever seen it on the old
films? I have, yeah.
Right? It's like a triangle, right? And like down in the low post, it's really further out, right?
Yeah.
Well, it didn't make sense to post up big guys in the trapezoid lane. So those European coaches
that shaped their way of playing. Yeah,
exactly. It shaped their thinking. And so what they have to do, they had to develop big guys that didn't necessarily post up, but played away from the basket. The other thing I'll tell you, and it's not an indictment of U.S. basketball because we still have the best basketball players and coaches in the world, is that they came up with the idea because they didn't have great athletes. We have to develop the skill level of every guy.
Yeah.
And, you know, and even I don't care if you're 6 foot or 7 foot, you're going to ball handle and pass, catch, shoot, dribble. And you can tell because when you watch the NBA now, it's clear that all these international players have had a great effect on our game. And so they're not better at it. It's just it's they've learned from us. They've tweaked things. Now when we watch Golden State play, or, you know, we love watching Doncic and Jokic and guys like that, we're learning from them because of the way they see the game.
I want to go back to one comment you said. It just made me think of Dick DiVenzio. I went to PGC in high school. I directed for them for a few years. And
greatest book ever.
That's right. I'm going back through the book. I highlighted a little. He just is one phrase. It was like he was just stopped what he was talking about and was talking right to coaches. He said, let's stop pretending that you got to spend as much time on defense as you got to spend on offense.
That's true.
And I thought only Dick, because there's a lot of coaches that, you know, defense wins championships. Well, then Mike Neighbors comes and says, no, it's ninth. He says it's ninth on the list, but defense efficiency, right? But I love that you said that.
Well, here's what I always thought. We emphasize defense, but we practice offense. So, like, if defense was 30% of our practice time, and let's say offense was 50, and the other 20% was whatever, game situations, you know, we definitely emphasized defense. We were intense. Every defensive drill was at a high level, but we had to practice offense more because it was harder to get good at. Yeah, no, that's how I see the game. I see it as, we'll emphasize defense. Don't get me wrong, but we're not going to be one of those teams that we'll just outscore you, because that works too for some people. But our point was, we're going to be really good defensively, but we have to. I have to be honest. I didn't have a lot of mentors, Matt. I had some: Gary Williams, Rick Barnes, Danny Nee. But I've always had great self-awareness. I'm blessed. And I always knew what I didn't know, and I always knew what I knew. And so what I did learn early on was, we're going to emphasize defense, but in order to be good as a team, you have to really practice offense more.
Coach, he nailed it with that self-awareness piece right there.
Yeah.
Instead of, in our practice time, instead of having offense and defense almost completely split, as if new segment, now all of our focus here, man, after you establish your concepts, your rules, the language that you want everybody to use, how you stand, where you stand, you establish that maybe through one shell drill, and then blend those two.
Yes.
If you have assistants, great. I have a couple, and they're part-time, but they're awesome. But even if it's just you, have the ability or the self-awareness in the moment to zoom out. It's the same thing as hitting culture. Culture isn't just a tagline at the beginning of your practice. Yes. Culture is infused all throughout, but you have to have the self-awareness to stop, hold on.
Yeah,
guys, that player's on the floor. What should we all be doing right now? That has nothing to do with offense or defense or whatever you're in. But it's an important moment.
You've given me like 8 different directions to go. You're driving me nuts, because number one, I was a fanatic about practice.
Yeah.
Okay. My guys were trained SEALs. You ever been to SeaWorld? You go to
SeaWorld. Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
They put on a show on a random Saturday morning in October 30 years ago in Manhattan College, when it's like, 38 degrees out, and coaches are coming in and practice is open. I got 8 high school coaches from New York there. At a random Saturday morning, 10 a.m. practice, my players would see the coaches and go, okay, They said to themselves, not to me, we're putting on a show today. We're going to show them how hard we practice. I mean, I'm telling you that they and they did it because I'm going to use the word brainwash them. We did. We brainwashed them that practice was really important to us. Okay. I'm going to tell you a quick story and then I want to remind me about Larry Brown. Okay.
Got it.
That year we had that great young team. We were 22-2 late in the season. And we played on a Monday and we were playing on Saturday, Monday, Saturday, late in the year, right? So we gave them off Tuesday and I came in on Wednesday and I said to my coaching staff, I'm going to give them another day off. We're in good shape. You know, kids are playing well. We're rolling. I said, but I don't want them to think I'm happy. So we're going to go out and practice for the first 5 minutes and then I'm going to kick them out. I'm going to come up with an excuse because I don't want them to be satisfied, right? So sure enough, and I could get volatile back in the day.
No.
Theatrically. So a guy drops a pass or something happens and I go nuts. I blow the whistle. Stop, stop. You guys think you're better than you are. You know, we're 22-2. I gave you one day off. You come out here today. So I kick him out and I go up to my office with my coaches and the coaches are laughing and smiling, you know, like that was a great acting job. My manager comes up like 5 minutes later and he said, Coach, they're practicing.
Oh, man.
I said, what are you talking about? He said, no, they're practicing. They took the practice plan. So my assistant coaches said, do we go down there? I said, no, it's not our team anymore. It's their team. They thought I got goosebumps now.
Yeah. No, that's powerful.
Because that might be the single most important thing that happened in my head coaching career over and above NCAA tournaments, beating Arizona, beating UConn, whatever, because I got them. Like they believe that this is why we were good. Now, so that's my practice story. I go see Larry Brown at SMU a lot when he was coaching there, right? And the beauty of Coach Brown, I always tried to figure out, Eddie Sutton was like this, and you played against Coach Sutton.
Yeah.
If you go to practice, you're kind of wondering, like, why are they so good? Like, there's nothing fancy here. It's a shell drill with a side pick and roll, right? But here's what I learned about Coach Brown and Eddie Sutton the same way. They're in a side pick and roll shell defensive drill, 4-on-4, and they're playing live. So as the ball handle comes off the screener rolls, the weak side defender rotates to get the screener. As you hit the roll man's trying to go big to big on the other side of the basket, right? Because his defender rotated over, but the weak side wing is rotating inside the big. And so now you have to skip it to the weak side and there's a closeout. So in one simple 8 seconds or less, you've got a pick and roll coverage. You got a pick and roll offense, a short roll play. You have a big to big post opportunity. And then you have a skip to the weak side where the defense now has to long close out and you play live. That's the ultimate example of what you're talking about if going offense and defense. And I always laugh. I'm going to tell you this. You ever heard this? Larry Brown is so smart. He could see all 10 guys on the court go up and down the court twice, and he'll come back and tell this one guy what he did wrong. And I always say to people, no, that's called coaching. Mm. That's called training your eyes as a young coach to be able to see all 10. And it's not easy, but you grow as a coach when you can really train your eyes. But to your point, Matt, I totally agree. You have to practice offense at the same time you're practicing your defense, and the defense at the same time you're working on your offense. And that's how because that's how basketball is played. It's very, very simple.
And if you don't do that, in my opinion, that's where slippage happens. Mm-hmm. Slippage happens on either side when we're working on shell, but the offensive player is just holding it above his head, not right. Looking like he's actually reading past level one, which is his defender, seeing levels 2 and 3 of what could be out there. So there's a danger there.
I think what happens is, especially with, say, shell drill, okay, every coach on this podcast will know what shell drill is. There's an opportunity to get very robotic, and that's not how the game is played. Now, I was a fanatic about shell drill because shell drill to me was like defensive warm up. You know, like we always passed catch. I used to have guys the first 20 minutes of practice say to me, I used to say to them because I know what they were thinking. Don't get bored if you're getting better. Like the first 20 minutes where we do all the basic offensive stuff. ball handling, passing, catching, moving, running up and down the court. We did a three-man weave, but we did it for perfection. When we did our weave stuff, which was mundane and monotonous, it was always about perfection. So there were never any drops and never any missed layups. So we started again. But my point was, don't get bored if you're getting better. Because I would say to you, Matt, hold on, Matt. When's the last time you traveled? And you'd say, Coach, I haven't traveled this year. I go, yeah, no fooling. That's why we do our UCLA footwork drill.
You're welcome.
yeah, exactly. So then they would say to themselves, and I say, oh, by the way, Matt, every time you come off that little pin down on three side, that's our UCLA footwork drill every morning, every practice. So I had to always explain, as you know, and you do it, the why of the drill. So the reason, and I would say this, I'm bored too. I'm bored with the first 20 minutes. I want to start doing 5-on-5 and get into my sets, but we're not going to be good at our sets if you're not great at the first 20 minutes. And don't get bored if you're getting better, because I'm bored too. I wanted them to know, like, I'm not just doing this drill because I'm the head coach. And, you know, this is what my high school coach taught us. I'm doing this drill because your footwork fits perfectly in the way you're going to come off a down screen and we're going to get you open.
That's a hard balance to have, right? Because I think
Thank you for checking out today's episode. Please take a moment to subscribe to this podcast, share it with your fellow coaches, and find us on social media for what's coming up next on the Jamoti Podcast. It's just a matter of doing it.